This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so excited that you're joining me today. I got one of my favorites of all time. I consider him a friend of mine. He's a fantastic writer, fantastic person. Of course, we're talking about W. Bruce Cameron. And we're going to talk to Bruce a little bit about his latest in the Young Reader series, Ripley, Fire Station 5, or the Dogs with a Purpose series. So we're going to talk a little bit about the book, we'll catch up on things, and then, of course, before we let him off the hook, we'll talk to him about writing in general, to learn a little bit more about how the master crafts his craft. So everybody hang tight. It's going to be a fun episode. Always great to talk to my buddy Bruce. So we'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is the number one New York Times bestselling author. Of course, you know him from his A Dog's Purpose series, and now he's just got a slew of other fantastic stuff going on. Of course, we're talking about W. Bruce Cameron. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim. It's great to be back. We've been doing this since the end of the First World War, I think.
I'm waiting for the documentary to come out about the ancient times when we did it through pigeons and stones. So I'm looking forward to that. So yes, my friend, it's been a little while now, but always great to catch up with you. And I know we go back a long way. So I'm super excited to be able to chat with you a little bit. And I'm really excited about the launch of the latest, Ripley Fire Station 5. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I've been writing books for younger readers for a long time. I write my puppy tales. And then for even smaller children, I write Lily to the Rescue. And those series, there's 10 puppy tales out so far. There's 10 Lilies. Another one's coming out next year, another Lily. So I've been steadily doing that. And I wanted to, maybe work a little harder. And I came up with the idea of this Dogs with a Purpose concept. These are working dogs that attain a lot of their self-worth out of just working. And the first one was about a water rescue dog. That's Zeus Water Rescue. That came out almost exactly a year ago. And then in the summer, this is the summer of Ripley. Ripley Fire Station 5 is about a dog who sort of initiates a pilot program in a suburban fire department, where Ripley is learning how to do search and rescue inside burning buildings. So to think about this, the Dogs with a Purpose series, is they're a lot harder to write because I have to do research. I have to know what I'm doing. And it was actually, Zeus was terribly difficult. I had to go to Hawaii to research Zeus, if you can believe it.
Yeah. The struggles you go through, Bruce.
Yeah. You know, it was tough. And if people want to contribute to a GoFundMe, that would make sense. I went there. I enrolled in a program to train with dogs in search and rescue, because part of what Zeus does, sort of as a sideline, is search and rescue. But then I got COVID while I was there, and I wound up spending the entire time in the hotel room looking out at the waves. So that teaches me to try to set a book in Hawaii, and I'm going to get punished for that. So this one's set in Minneapolis, which is, you know, a wonderful place to be, especially in the dead of winter. Ripley is a wonderful dog, a blue Merle border collie, very smart, flunked out of school for the blind program because he's a little hyper. The lieutenant in the fire department is dead set against dogs, and Ripley forms a relationship with his dog, Sitter, a girl who comes into his life. And so it's really, and her name's Samantha, and Samantha has some issues. She's got an anxiety disorder, and the dog can really help her with that. So Ripley is a full-time working dog, and just the tension of trying to figure out how to make it work in a fire department with a dog in a fire, it's a challenge. So part of this book is just the training and the experience from a dog's point of view of what it's like to be trained in a pilot program for fighting people that are trapped in fires.
That's fantastic. So the research behind this one, is it similar to what you had attempted in Hawaii? Did you go to Minneapolis and work with the fire station people to get a better understanding? Or how was the research done?
I did go to Minneapolis, mainly just because I like to, if I'm going to set a book somewhere, I like to get the lay of the land. I like to know what the air is like. I got to Minneapolis, and one of the first things I noticed is that there are so many trees. And that's something a dog would pick up on. A dog might not notice that people are eating beer cheese soup, but they would be definitely into all these trees. So I like to go and do that, the topography. But the research for Ripley is personal experience, because one of my very first jobs as an adult was working for a fire department in a suburban town outside of Kansas City. And I remember that they put me on the rescue squad, and they said, okay, it's your job to go into a burning building and find people if they're trapped. And I went into the burning building. I couldn't find my hands. The smoke was just completely black and oppressive. And I remember crawling around and thinking, what am I? I've got all this equipment on my back. I can barely move. I'm clinging to the hose. I'm terrified. Why am I here? And I thought, even at that time, this is how long ago, I thought, why don't we have dogs doing this? Because a dog's nose can find people, even in smoke. It's all you have to do is just train them to get past this, whatever stimulus is in front of them, and focus in that they need to find. So that was the germ of this idea way, way back when I first started working in the real world.
I love that. I know that you toiled at many, many jobs, obviously a master repo man. We know that one. So I don't know if I knew about the fireman job. So the CV was quite lengthy long before you became a world-class author.
I had so many jobs before I finally sold a book. But I always wanted to be a writer. And I didn't know I was going to write dog books, but I knew I was going to write books. And I knew I wanted to write novels, even though initially I was writing humor books. But it just felt right to make a book about Ripley. And, the tension for this that comes from a lot of different ways. One of them is that should they do the right thing by this girl, Samantha, and take the dog out of the program and give her the dog? Because she's got an anxiety disorder. Or is there a way to fold Ripley's duties as a fire station dog into being a support dog for Samantha? These are some of the questions that have to be answered during the course of Ripley Fire Station 5.
That's fantastic. And I love the fact of the research component. I know you do a lot more research for your novels and all your other ones as well. But I love the fact that you actually, delve into that, get a flavor for, the craft, even though you had some knowledge of it before working as a firefighter, but also going there, looking at the topography. Because it'd be very, in my opinion, I don't want to say, take this sleight of hand, but it'd be very easy to be able to write and just, pull up something on Google and find out there's trees in, more than lakes in Minnesota, more than lakes in the Vikings in Minnesota, though Minnesota fans, don't write me letters, please. I understand. But but yeah, and the fact that you went there to delve into it a little bit more to get a better flavor for it, and it actually opened it up to, I think, much deeper writing, in my opinion.
Thank you. I try to be as authentic as I can. On the other hand, I also am very fanciful. For example, in Zeus Water Rescue, the first dog in the series, there really isn't a program in America to train water rescue dogs. I have met literally all the water rescue dogs in America because we have so few of them. I've met the trainers. I know what they're doing, and they are not being hired to train hundreds and hundreds of dogs, even though we've got thousands of miles of beaches and the potential to save many lives if we had dogs. These dogs are not being utilized in the United States. So when I invented a program for training water rescue dogs in Hawaii, I was making something up. And then I also made up, though, that there's a boy named Kimo who falls in love with the dog and wants to keep the dog, even though they're raising it for sale. They want to sell Zeus, the owner does, the father, but the son wants to keep Zeus. And so there's that story, that underlying tension that makes that a story worth. And when it comes to Ripley, same thing. It's like they're absolutely adamantly against having Ripley in the fire department. The captain is inclined, but the captain's getting ready to retire. What will happen to Ripley then? And what are we going to do about Samantha's growing dependence on Ripley for emotional support? It's a complicated problem. And I look at that as being the secret to my success writing for younger children. I don't dumb anything down. These books are basically, I write them for adults, and then my editors go through and they request permission to make the vocabulary a little more simple, sometimes to take out themes that they find to be too mature, and I'm okay with that. But I never set out to write a children's book. I set out to write an adult book, and that is the feature of Dogs with a Purpose.
There you go. And you know you're a world-class best-selling author when your editors actually ask you to manipulate the book. So kudos on you on that one. I love that for sure. I love that, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the whole concept of Dogs with a Purpose came from A Dog's Purpose. You know, each one of those characters, the animals, the dogs, of course, had jobs. They had various jobs throughout the whole sequence of the novel. I'm assuming this series did pull from that and sort of highlights individual dogs in more detail.
Well, this is ancient history. When I sat down to write A Dog's Purpose many, many years ago, it seems, I had it in mind that a couple of the dogs would be tracking dogs. And I wanted an air sniffing dog and I wanted a ground sniffing dog. And then I came to realize that I didn't have to have two, and that it would be more fun to have a search and rescue dog who works for the fire department. And that was Ellie. And Ellie was a very important part of the book. But Bailey was just a pet. And I don't want to say just a pet because
That's
they're
right.
So important.
Yeah, you don't want to get letters either. Yeah.
But you were right, Tim. I was focused on how much dogs really love having a purpose. We bred them for so long to be at our beck and call and to assist us in whatever we're doing that they long for that now. That's what they want. And so I set out to say, well, I'll write a series about dogs that are working. I'll call it Dogs with a Purpose. It does tie into A Dog's Purpose a little bit, but that's more of a branding thing than it is a theme. But as I said, doing the research for this, I'm writing a book right now about a sheep herding dog, and it'll be out in a year. And we're calling that one Stella. And Stella is sheep herding, and that's so complicated and difficult to learn as a human. I mean, I don't know how dogs do it because I can't keep these commands straight, but they do.
So I see a trip in the future to the Scottish Highlands or Ireland to really get a better feel for how sheep herding dogs actually do their craft.
That's a great suggestion, Tim. I'll put you in touch with my editor and you can tell her that the publisher needs to underwrite a little research.
Yeah, I think so. Now you just need to figure out what dogs in Tahiti do. That's the key. That's the next one.
Right.
I love it. So let me ask you on the book itself. You know, I love the fact that Ripley, you know, in Ripley and Fire Station 5, you know, this is a border collie. Now, I won't profess to have ever been in every fire station out there, and I won't profess to know everything about the craft. You know, they do fantastic work. But every dog I've ever seen, you know, you go back to the traditional Dalmatian, of course, that's associated with fire stations. And I've seen quite a few golden retrievers and various types of Labradors, you know, sniffing type dogs. But I've never seen a border collie. So in when you put together Ripley Fire Station 5, is it a matter of trying to find something a little bit different that would provide a little bit different hook into the book? Or was it more of you learned more from the research side of things that said, hey, you know, this is the type of dog we should put into the book?
Well, all dogs are wonderful. And I so enjoy reading about different dogs and their traits. And border collies are really smart. And they are among the dogs that are accepted into the leader dog for the blind programs. It was initially going to be a book about a leader dog for the blind, but honestly, I ultimately decided that it was more interesting to go with the fire department idea, and that's where I went. Every dog is wonderful, and any dog is capable of doing the kind of work Ripley does, but Ripley is just a very special dog who happens to be the one that I picked. I could have picked a Dalmatian. I think, you know, people always decry the intelligence of Dalmatian. They are beautiful dogs. That doesn't mean they're dumb and beautiful. Some of them are very smart. So that wasn't a factor. Labradors, I'll just note that my dog Zeus is a Labrador, and I have some Labradors sprinkled throughout my books. I grew up with Labradors, so it's very easy for me to write about those. So I kind of needed to pick a different breed. And I'd never written about border collies before, but when I started researching them, I was fascinated by their instincts, their desire to impose order on chaos. That seemed perfect for a dog who was going into a burning building.
I love that. I love that aspect of it. Putting together the book itself, the background, the research, and the things that went into it, I love the fact that you started on one path or one idea, whether it be the type of dog or in what they would be doing, and sort of finessed it to what would actually be something you think would be attractive. How do you finesse the type of character that's in the book? Because oftentimes, obviously, there's a dog that has a job. That's one part of the drama. But the other is the dog is supporting usually a child or someone within a family member. How do you develop that part of it and decide what type of personality, character, trait, challenge, whatever it may be, that particular character is going to be going through?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim, because ultimately in my dog books, there are an awful lot of people. An exception might be parts of the book I wrote called The Dog Master, which went into the inner workings of a pack of wolves.
Right.
But for the most part, dogs, the drama surrounding the dogs is mostly due to the external influences of human beings. You don't really have dogs that are embezzling from the company or sending bullying emails. That just doesn't happen. So if you want to put drama into a book, you're going to have to rope in some human beings. And I think that a lot of people read my books, like A Dog's Purpose, and scarcely notice the people in it. Except for when you start talking to them, they start talking about the relationship between the dog and the people. And that's the essence of dogs with a purpose. They're here to help us, humans. Therefore, our stories are important to the book as well. Ripley, Fire Station 5, there's all these firefighters. And then there's Samantha, the girl who's his dog sitter. And then there's the lieutenant who wants the dog out of the fire department. And Josh, who is the person who brought the dog into the program. So you've got all these things going on, and it's got mostly to do with humans, but people who want to read about dogs and understand dogs and just be in the world of dogs, they will not be disappointed by Ripley Fire Station 5.
There you go. Love it. I love it. And as they always say, never work with animals or children because they'll always upstage you. So I love that. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Debbie Bruce Cameron, the book Ripley Fire Station 5. We'll talk to Bruce also about writing in general. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them, or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to Communicate with Animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with number one New York Times bestselling author and our good friend, W. Bruce Cameron. Now, Bruce, we talked a lot about the book Ripley, Fire Station 5. When people take a look at this book, read through the book, as well as just the series in general, is there key takeaways that you want them to walk away with, or things that you get, you know, emails and people when they get to visit with you and all the book signings that you hope they say, hey, here's what I got out of it, and thank you. I mean, is there something that more than that you're wanting, or is that a no?
It's always true that a message I try to give everybody who is ever involved in reading any of my books is that dogs are thinking, feeling, sentient beings, spiritual animals. They rely on humans. We are their shepherds. We are their bosses. They see us as being somewhere between their parents and their God. They think of us as running the world, and we owe it to them to shepherd them through the world in a safe way. And so as one reads any of my books, but let's just take Ripley, Fire Station 5, you quickly start to understand Ripley's fate is in the hands of humans. Whatever's going to happen to Ripley, whatever Ripley wants is secondary to what is going to happen when the humans decide what his fate is. So the lesson, that's the takeaway, that we should recognize that and honor it, and we should always take special care that they are well cared for and that they are never exposed to anything that's painful and harmful if we can help it.
Love it. Good messaging. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I know our listeners do too. We love dogs and we love cats and every animal. I want to put that out there for sure. But yeah, dogs in our life, it is a special, special thing. And I'm glad that you recognize it, and it comes out in everything you write. So big kudos as always.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about writing. I know I've picked your brain many, many times over the years. It's amazing. We've known each other for quite some time, and yet we have never aged a minute. So it works out great for us. But when we first met many moons ago, you know, it was when A Dog's Purpose came out and followed by A Dog's Journey and all the wonderful novels that followed that. And then all of a sudden, things started shifting, I say, or taking off, or however you want to label it. And now you've got, you know, the novels that come out. You've got the young reader novels and the Dogs with a Purpose series. Then you got the Puppy Tales series. And then you got the Lily to the Rescue chapter books. So as I envision in my mind, you know, there's like four different things going on. And how do you keep that structured? How do you keep that flow going? Because I'm assuming also you can answer this question is, how often does a novel come out compared to a Lily to the Rescue chapter book?
Well, that's a great question. I tend to publish maybe one book for grownups a year. Those generally take much longer to put together. Although I will note that it's a bigger challenge to write a book, a Dogs with a Purpose book, than pretty much any other kind of book I've ever written, because of the amount of research and the amount of way I've got to be accurate. And I have a tendency to ignore timeline. So I'll be like, okay, and so then the lambs are born in December. And then I look it up, lambs are not born in December. So that's always coming at. But for the most part, it's one adult book a year, one or two of the Puppy Tale / Dogs with a Purpose. Those are both the same length, and they have similar targets. I'd say that Dogs with a Purpose series skews more older Many adults have read Seuss Water Rescue. They haven't read Ripley's Fire Station 5 yet because that's relatively new on the scene. But the adults like those books and older kids like those books. Younger children like the Puppy Tales. But then it goes to the reading level, honestly. I mean, I've had children and that's just how that goes. I was certainly a precocious reader. Other people are too. If your child is struggling with reading, a dog book has the point of view of a dog is told from the point of view of a wonderful, relatable animal who's optimistic, joyful, and has not a mean bone in its body. And I think that's a great character to lure you into reading a full novel.
I love that. I love that idea. And you're right. You know, I do think that the younger adults and kids in particular, when they attach themselves to either a author or a style of writing or whatever it may be, they'll read everything that is put out by that particular author or that particular style. And I think that's amazing because I would find it very hard, like you said, to say, okay, this book's going to be for adults. This one's going to be for, you know, young adults. This one's going to be for younger than, you know, so on and so forth down the line, because you never know. You never know what they're going to pick up and read, because if they love the style of the book, the author of the book, the characters, the dogs for sure, they would want to read everything that comes out on that.
Yeah, I think so. And so, if you've got a child who's a reluctant reader, if you're a teacher, a librarian, or if you're a parent, try steering them toward one of my Puppy Tales and see if that makes a difference.
I love that. I love it. So let me ask you two more questions that come to mind as far as timing and scheduling and how you go about crafting. I don't need to know the life in Bruce Cameron, but I do need to know, how do you go about structuring your day? And then of course, football season, you know, that we know the Chiefs will interrupt some of that. And if there's a nice freshly baked bunch of cookies that Catherine makes, you know, that will interrupt things too. But how do you structure your day? Because I would imagine you've got a lot of different things going on and you can't just focus on one particular book at a time, or do you?
Well, there's a process of rewriting. I'm in the process of rewriting a book right now. I literally started the next draft before you and I had a phone call. And that process is sequential. I don't think I could create and rewrite a book and then do one book one day and then switch to the other. It is true, though, that when the book gets into the editing phase, they'll send me like a bunch of artwork and they'll say, what do you think of this artwork for the book? Or they'll send me edited pages and they'll say, the editor has these notes. And so I can stop working on whatever book I'm on and jump into that for 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, however long that takes, and then come back to the book I'm creating. But if I'm creating a book and I'm in a draft, I am loath to halt that draft. In fact, I had to do that one time. It had to do with a motion picture deadline, and I'm glad we did because the movie was made, came out, and there was a Dog's Courage and, A Dog's Way Home, and it was a great experience. But I had to stop writing a book, and then I never picked it back up because it just broke the momentum for me. So that's a great question, and I do, despite your expectations, I do pretty much go sequentially.
Wow. So, I mean, how many hours would you spend a day on this? Because I know I've seen you and learned this from you, that you're very structured, you're very detailed as far as how you go about doing things, but also once you get locked in, that's what you're doing. You know, you're in the zone, you're in the zone. But I mean, is that, you know, is it as simple as saying, okay, I enjoy this so much, I'm locked in, I'm going to spend the next 5 hours writing something? Or is it more of, I'm going to do, as things pop in that I have to do, I'm going to, you know, write around that hour here, 3 hours there, 5 hours there, whatever it may be.
Well, you just describe the devil and the angel of any writer. There's the angel that says, look, you know, let everything go and just concentrate on your writing. Like that's what gives you joy. That's how you make your living. And that you'll feel better if you do it that way. And then there's the other part, which is the day-to-day stuff that you just alluded to. And, you know, who's going to pick up the prescription from the drugstore? You know, and pretty soon you find that the entire day you have spent messing around instead of writing. And I do try to be disciplined. I block off time in my calendar and I I don't look at emails and texts when I get them because I'm focused on writing my book, but it's difficult. And then my back is not in the greatest of shape. And if I go more than 4 hours writing and sitting in the desk chair, I'm not going to be able to write as much the next day, and my back will just not let me do it. So I have to pace myself. And 3 hours, 3.5 hours of staring at the screen and typing and working and sitting, and that's about all my body can take. It's a physical thing more than a mental thing.
That's amazing. And that's very true. I think that, you know, people don't think of that, especially when you get into the computer chair and you're typing. Time slips by really, really quick. And if you don't stop every once in a while to get up and take a stretch, it'll wear on you mentally, but it'll wear on you physically as well. So, you know, unless you're going to do some doggy yoga with Tucker, you're in trouble. And I don't know, Tucker's right. Too much of a superstar to let that happen. So
he probably is.
One last question I got to ask you on the whole writing in general. You're, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, you're getting quite a large bookshelf of your own books, which is fantastic. How do you as a writer keep track of them? Because I think you're a master at that too. I'll give you big kudos for that too, because even in this episode, you know, we've talked about various books in the series, whether we were talking about Rippling, you immediately went back to Zeus. And so how do you keep track of that? Is it a matter of you're so intimately involved in the characters that you naturally remember them like they're your children? Or is it something that is a little bit different than that?
I am so sorry to have to shatter your illusions, but just earlier in this very interview, I referred to a character in Ripley as Josh, but that's from The Dogs of Christmas. The character in Ripley is Ben. So despite your wonderful compliments, I don't keep track of anything. I actually have a list of who my characters are. Because I found if I accidentally name a character in one of my books, and then I name another character in another book the same name, I get readers writing me and saying, are these the same people? Are they related? Do they know each other? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even see that coming. So I have to be very meticulous. Otherwise, I cause all that confusion. But no, I don't keep it all trapped in my head. Ripley is my 36th published book.
Wow.
And there's just no way I can remember all the 35 other books worth of characters and situations, all of that.
I just did that to trip you up a little bit, Bruce. I knew that all along. I wasn't. No, but I think it's great. That's a great information for writers out there because, you know, you do become intimate with all the characters in the books and you do become intimate with the books themselves. But as you're firing off different books and keeping things going, you know, you're working on the next one while we're talking about this one. That's always been one of the challenges. Keep it straight. And I know your fans will keep you honest on that and straight on that. So that's part of that research. You didn't give yourself a big enough pat on the back for some of the research or lack thereof of some of the other books. But yeah, that's part of the research as well. You have to make sure you're keeping track of, you know, you can't have a Josh 1 and a Josh 2 that will never fly.
That's exactly right. You've got that exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, tell everybody where they can find out more about you and the books and activities, where they can possibly catch up with you, because I know you're still getting out and about, and where can we best keep track of you?
You can pick up a copy of Ripley Fire Station 5 pretty much anywhere you buy books. They are in Target and Walmart, and they are in every independent bookstore, and I would urge people to go in and ask for it by name. The way to find out what's going on with me is wbrucecameron.com, which we don't update. You'll probably find out where I was going on book tour last year. I do know that I'll be on book tour pretty much solidly from late September through early November. And I'm going to all cities all across the United States, none in Canada, but I am going to the United States this trip. So if anyone wants to come see me, we'll get the information out. It'll be in Facebook. It'll be places like that. And we'll let you know. And I would love to have people come out and meet me and we'll have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody gets a chance, obviously a big fan and a big friend of Bruce. So I consider him my friend, and I've always enjoyed listening to him, seeing him, getting to meet him. And it's a treasure. It really is. I will say that, to get a chance to be there and listen to you and talk a little bit about books and life and definitely dogs. So everybody keep track of that.
The dogs.
Yeah, definitely dogs. It's like, no matter what you want to talk about, it always comes back to dogs. Everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's Ripley Fire Station 5. It's part of the Dogs with a Purpose series. It's a wonderful, wonderful read. Everybody's going to enjoy it, and it's a perfect read for everyone in the family. So I know an author never wants to hear that. They'd rather you buy 4 or 5 of the books for each person in the family, but I will say that it's great for everybody in the family. So everybody pick up a copy, Ripley Fire Station 5 by our good friend, W. Bruce Cameron. Bruce, it's fantastic talking to you again. Congratulations on another success. And I'll be looking forward to chatting with you sooner than later, because I know you got so much great stuff coming out.
We have great stuff. Thank you so much for this, Tim. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, ideas, or comments for the show, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com, and we will answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the wonderful other hosts and shows on PetLifeRadio.com. It's a cornucopia of barking fun. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.